Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. All right. What's up, guys? Welcome back for another awesome episode. We have a special treat this week. We don't just have one awesome guest. We have two. We have the power couple from the West Coast. We have Dan Stevenson, and we also have Tasha Wolf Whalen with us in the house. They're probably the strongest couple you'll ever meet. They also happen to be super damn smart. They literally teach the certification in the PPSC where I got certified in, and they are just wealths of knowledge. They also walk the walk. They're, like I said, strong as hell. Tasha just competed in the Arnold and brought home the gold. So this is so cool. I'm so happy that this happened after the Arnold, so we could talk on that a little bit. But guys, welcome.
Thank you so much. We're excited to be here. We appreciate it. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Of course, of course. So before we dive into the tactical stuff, because I know everybody comes in hoping for some tips they can apply to their own situation, let's tell them a little bit about you. So which one of you guys would like to go first on exactly like what your origin story is with this whole thing? Like what got you into fitness and where we're at now?
Okay, well, I'll go first. I usually am that one. You know, ladies first, of course. Let's see. I have been in the industry for 23 years now, so I've been in it for quite a while. I have been currently at Pro Sports Club, which is one of the largest health clubs in the country, for the last 13 years. And I have worked my way up into a manager and head coach position, and also as one of the head mentors on our team. So do a lot of education. On top of that, also am a master instructor for the Pain-Free Performance Certification course, like you said, PPSC. And I have academically, I went to school, went to college for way too long, like way too long, because I did a lot of bad years in high school. But I did earn a few degrees. So I am educated in cultural anthropology, archaeology, dance, exercise science, and athletic training. So I went to.
So you're basically a jacked Indiana Jones.
Yes, that is what I actually like to be referred to as. Yeah. So I have a big background on things, but also am a competitive strength athlete. I've been competing for about 13 to 15 years, I guess, in powerlifting, and then strongman for the last about 5 years. And again, as you said, I did just win the Arnold Classic World Championships, actually. So I am the current lightweight world champion for strongman. So that's a little bit about me. Yeah.
And nice. I think that makes you the highest level guest of the show so far. So
nice.
Awesome.
Ooh, like that.
Right. So I'm Dan Stevenson, a very similar background to Tasha. I've been in the industry for about 20 years. One big thing that brought me to the industry was actually getting into pain myself. So as I started working out really young, I hurt myself doing a bench press. I remember it, arched my butt's way off the bench, back just tightened up, and my friends would call it the Dan Stevenson bad back disease because it stuck with me, that same muscle strain, for years beyond that. So I actually played tennis athletically in high school, and it would just cripple me sometimes. So that was so frustrating, and that led me, you know, trying different things to try to feel better, like get out of pain. And it really helped to open up my knowledge base of like, I need to learn how to do this better. I need to learn how to train better. So that really led me down the path of exercise science. So have a degree in that, and then also work at the same facility here that we're actually recording out of now at Pro Sports Club. And I also do the education here as well. So we're, as talking about, kind of leading the education department and helping to grow a lot of new trainers in this industry. And it's very fun, very fruitful to see the growth of like young professionals, and love that field. Then also working with clients full time as well. So yeah.
Love that. Well, to say you guys are qualified is an understatement. So now, a couple of things I wanted to touch on, because I know, Dan, you just mentioned low back pain, and I know that's like one of the big, big things that so many people struggle with. What were like some tactics that worked for you that helped reduce that back pain? Because as a fellow back pain in high school, like, I guess, brother. Like, I'd love to pick your brain and see what worked for you.
Yeah, definitely. So I think learning from my mistakes of how I was training improperly at that time. So as most teenage boys probably do, focusing a little bit too much on maybe sagittal plane movements, so stuff that's right in front of you, bicep curls, bench press, that kind of thing, where really just the show muscles, I guess you would say, and not really moving in multiple planes of motion or prioritizing a lot of, I would say, 360 degree core strength. So my hips were probably really weak, immobile at that time, and then trying to layer on top of that performance, right? And by performance at that time, it's like me trying to pick up, you know, maybe 300 pounds on a deadlift as a scraggly little boy. That didn't feel too great, right? So learning to move in three planes of motion, learning to really strengthen up hips, both laterally, transitionally, like rotation, and really honing in the bracing form and positioning, I think was huge in terms of getting me out of pain. I tried a lot of chiropractic, physical therapy, which had some benefit, but it really, I think, was the training that helped a ton, because the stronger that I've gotten in different movements, different positions, I've been able to then, you know, now I'm deadlifting close to 700 pounds. So that, from coming from something where, you know, debilitating lower back pain, like learning, like the answers are really in the gym.
Can I ask you a question about that, actually?
Sure.
Just to follow up with that. After you injured your back, did you avoid doing low back strengthening, or did you actually focus on low back strengthening?
So initially it was, you know, you'd kind of get that lower back pump from training. And I don't know if you've experienced this as well, Brian, but that lower back pump, it's like, oh, it's working, right? Like, oh, it's just, I got to work through it. But it really was kind of learning where that neutral spine position was. So it wasn't that I'd neglected it, but I just didn't really understand proper positioning. So I would still try to train through it, which probably made it worse. And part of the reason I think I was stuck in extension from a lot of the movement patterns that I would train and just get stuck in that pattern, extension being basically a lordotic arch where you kind of have that arch in your lower back and the ribs are flared. So that lower back was just chronically on. So yeah, it was really, I think, learning the right position to train it properly.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah. Tasha, you beat me right to it because I think that they're, it's okay. I'm all about it. Now, it's common because we hear, like, when somebody hurts their back, it's like, oh, just don't do deadlifts anymore. Don't do any type of bending over to pick stuff up because you'll never, ever have to do that in your life ever again. Right? Like, what, why would we keep that in the rotation? Like, I know one of the biggest things I actually learned from PPSC and some of the instructors was, like, if you avoid that, then you're going to get weaker. And if you get weaker, won't that cause more problems?
Exactly. You're only as strong as your weakest point. And it's true.
Exactly.
That's funny about low back though, too, because we have a lot of clients too that are like, oh, I feel that in my low back. And they get so freaked out about it because there's all that misconception about feeling it in your low back. That's risky. It's dangerous. It's not good. But when you're strengthening your low back and the musculature around it, you are going to feel sensation in that region and the spinal erectors, right? And they're like, oh, I feel it here. I'm like, cool, you're getting stronger. That's okay. So to be able to understand the good versus the bad feelings and knowing that, like, hey, even if you feel it, it doesn't mean it's a bad thing. You're actually working the tissues around that to build up that tolerance, you know, but it's always a very interesting
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't understand that the screamer isn't always the source. And when it comes to, like, actually fixing the problem, like, Dan, for your example, like, what were some of the areas you had to work on? Was it necessarily the lower back, or are we talking, like, different spots around it?
It was my hips. So, like, I mean, I was doing, like, four-way cable, like, lateral abductions, adductions as well, adductors, all of that. Like, I never really trained that until probably, honestly, pretty much college. And it was just like, wow, I'm really weak at these. Like, so training more in first isolation, but then building those into, like, maybe doing more lateral lunges, you know, doing some things where I'm like dragging a sled sideways, So doing things that got me stronger in that position. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, the hips were key for me. And then I'd also include like obliques in there as well. More like the kind of the anti-core movements was a big one for me, establishing a better brace.
Yeah. And Tasha, you too, because I know strongman in itself has so many things that you're prone to injury when it comes to shoulders, low back and stuff. Are there areas that you prioritize to make sure that you stay healthy?
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, yeah, shoulders are a big one. So I really spend a lot of time on the stabilizers. So a lot of the posterior chain, so upper back, rear delts, a lot of people neglect that on like shoulders. So really thinking about what stabilizes the muscles. Abductors, big one. People neglect the abductors. And that was something that I actually struggled with low back. I used to have low back pain and I had it. I got injured several years ago and it lasted for probably 3 years. I mean, it was just brutal. But what I didn't realize was how horribly weak my adductors were, right? And you have to think about, again, it's not necessarily the low back was the source. It was other things tugging on it, tightness, tenderness, and weakness in other areas of my body that was causing a lot of that low back discomfort. So once I actually was working on some mobility and then stabilizing myself and strengthening up, again, adductors, for example, that really saved my back. My pain completely went away. You know, so I think we get too hyper-focused on the things that we're really good at and things that we enjoy doing and things that we're strong at, because we feel good when we're strong at something and good and capable at things. And the things that are hard and challenging, our weak links, we like to avoid because they suck and they're not fun to do and you don't get a push heavy or et cetera. But once you kind of look at the bigger picture of things and you spend really consistent time on those weak areas, oh my gosh, it's night and day difference. It truly is. And I would really like hone in on people to really focus on their weak points and take that as opportunity, because then you're just going to skyrocket into your, you know, strength and performance and whatever your goals may be. So bring up those weak links.
And for anybody wondering, like adductors, what the heck is that? That's basically those muscles on the outside of your butt, your hips that run down the outside of your legs. Those are your adductors. So just so everybody knows what we're talking about. And when it comes to these weak points, I know we all kind of serve the general population, mostly people over the age of 40. What are some typical weak points that you see a lot of the clients that need certain work on? I know you probably already mentioned them, but like, what are some really big areas of emphasis?
Yeah, I would probably go with core strength first, because just kind of managing their, basically their rib cage and their pelvis and learning where that stability should be. So not just your abs, but your obliques, your lower back, and pretty much the entire trunk. So 360 degrees. I would say that's probably the biggest one. Aside from that, I'd say upper back is also another key one that we see, especially people that are newer to training where they haven't done a whole lot of stuff there of like, you know, face pulls or any kind of back work, or all they do is lat pull downs, but they don't necessarily hit their upper back. And then probably third I would go with is hips, like hamstrings, glutes, maybe throw in hip flexors in there as well. That can be a big one that does kind of lump a little bit in with that core, a lot of the core movements. But yeah, the hamstrings and glutes, I would say was probably the third one.
Gotcha. And also real quick, I just realized, because I was looking at my notes, I'm like, I mixed up abductors and adductors. Adductors are the inside of your legs, guys. I apologize. Yeah. It's easy to mix them up. It's easy to mix them up, because that's why a lot of people say AB or AD ductors, because it's easy to talk about the wrong one. Whoopsie.
Good save. And I do that all the time. I tell people, like, abduction. I'm like, no, the other one.
The other one.
Well, yes.
In terms of our conversation,
both are important. So,
yeah.
What's wrong?
Yep.
To add a couple more to this, what I noticed, again, Dan was kind of focusing on regions. What I think a lot of people need to spend time and focus on is positioning, simply positioning their bodies properly, because a lot of pain and really occurs from suboptimal position when they're doing things. For example, side plank. I have clients, if I say, hey, we're going to do a side plank, they're like, oh, no, that hurts my shoulder. I'm like, all right, well, can I see you in the position? And then they're all cranked up like this to the side. I'm like, yeah, that would hurt me too if I did it like that. So positioning is typically one of the biggest common errors that I see with a lot of people, generally speaking, but also into their 40s, because a lot of people that come to us haven't had the years of experience. You know, like they're often brand new to this at 40, you know, and they're coming to us with all these compensations. So now we have to try to correct the compensations and get them into better positions. So positioning to me is a huge reason why people do get injured and have limitations and compensations. And then the other one would be bracing. Like, bracing is a skill. And if you don't know how to, and coaches, we say this, get tight, create tension. Now, we understand what that means, but for someone, again, that doesn't have our knowledge, our skill set, our training years, they have no idea. They're like, what do you mean by get tight? So teaching people what it really means to create tension in the body, and that goes a long ways, because if you're loosey-goosey and you're under load, low back's going to go out, knees might cave in, hips are going to go, shoulders. So creating tension, so just body awareness, that mind-muscle movement connection too. Significant. So positioning, yeah, and proper breathing and bracing to me.
And that's why I crack up a little bit when you hear like chiropractors and physical therapists that are like, you shouldn't have to like brace super hard or put on a weightlifting belt. You should be able to do it as long as the load is right, as long as you're doing weight that you can handle. And you're just like, anybody who's kind of strong knows that that's bullshit.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and there's with bracing too, it's like a, Dan always uses this analogy. It's like a dial, right? So you want to brace appropriately for the task at hand. So it's not like when you're bracing, you don't always have to go max out, squeeze everything as hard as possible. It really depends on what you're doing, what's the task, and what's the load. But being able to differentiate, you know, creating tension and how much tension and when to dial it back is, I think, very valuable in terms of training people, especially as they age too, right? Because we want to, as coaches, especially with our 40 plus population, spare the wear and tear on their joints, that mileage. We're trying to reduce the mileage, yep, by putting them in the right positions and teaching them how to create tension, how to breathe properly, how to brace properly, and then execute that lift.
Yep. And as you were saying that, it made me think of like probably like the number one thing that it seems like most clients get injured doing, and that is moving furniture. So talk about like needing to brace under heavy load. Like, would you guys say that happens a lot with you too, where it's like somebody comes in and like, I had to move some stuff for my kid going to college and I'm just wrecked.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, kind of random movements that they might have not been that prepared for. Right. I mean,
yeah, sometimes shoveling even snow.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Repetitive rotation. Sometimes it's, you know, one of those things where you're just like, yeah, I just bent down too fast to tie a shoe. It's like, oh, I threw my back out. But like, so ingraining those movement patterns and just, I mean, you can learn those skills in the gym, right? Of like how to lift. Like, yeah, that's a deeper deadlift, picking up a couch. Yeah. But hopefully you have the right mechanics to then be prepared for it and be kind of connecting the dots of like, oh yeah, this is kind of heavy. Maybe I should treat it like a deadlift. Get tight.
Yeah.
And actually practice what coach is teaching. For sure.
And it's like when you are that super strong and you're in a weird position, you are a little bit more resilient than you otherwise would be too. Like even if your form isn't picture perfect.
Right.
For sure. Yeah. 100%.
Agreed.
Yeah. It makes you think of the Atlas stones, like watching Tasha lifting the stones up.
That's, you see some of these moves in sports like that. Like strongman is one of those ones where we have really weird, random implements that we have to lift over our heads or over bars and run with it. And so that's why really focusing on, like Dan was saying, different planes of motion, that 360, like you got to be strong in weird movements too, but like in the right position. So it's an interesting sport to me for sure, especially coming from powerlifting into strongman. Very different. You got to be strong in both, but I mean, powerlifting, squat, bench, deadlift all the time. That never changes. Strongman changes every single time. So you have to be prepared for anything.
Yeah. And for anybody listening who's not familiar with like powerlifting or strongman, sometimes powerlifters do get a reputation for being somewhat of divas because the bar needs to be perfect. The shoes need to fit just right. And when it's like strongman, it's like, I got to lift that. Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Totally. A lot less steamy for sure.
Now, I want to bring it back a little bit to the bracing because I know everybody listening right now is like, damn, this is really important. I kind of want to know how to do this. So if somebody's listening and obviously we can't go hands-on with them, what are some easy ways for them to practice how to brace on their own, whether they're sitting in their car right now or listening while they're in the gym?
I'll give you one before you answer because I know you're going to get like nerdy probably and technical. Brian, I want you to do something for me if you would.
All right.
Laugh three times for me. Ha ha ha.
Oh,
Louder. Ha ha ha.
my neighbors are gonna hate me.
Pat, where did you feel that when you did that?
Right in the
Did you
abs.
feel that in your core? Right? Yeah.
Yep.
So like even something like that is simple and it does one of two things. It teaches them like, oh yeah, I got tighter. I felt that in my core. And then it makes them laugh. So you're bringing a little bit of joy immediately to the session by you're teaching them a skill and then you're making it funny. Like that's a simple, easy one just to like do different pitches too, you know? So I make my group fitness classes do that. So I'll get a group of people laughing and they just continue to die laughing, but they get tighter and more
Yeah.
tense and then they start connecting the dots. Oh, that's what that feels like. So silly, but
Yeah,
it's fun. It's effective.
and when you do see some people that lift like deadlift crazy amounts of weight, they'll do the and like
Yeah,
actually like try and
exactly.
get them going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
We'll add to
I
that.
swear, guys, all those big deadlifters aren't crazy. They're not just psychopaths and well, maybe they are, but but there's a reason.
Right.
That's
The grunts, the groans. Yeah,
right.
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say on
Anything to
top of that,
add?
I mean, I would just add like positioning, kind of as Tasha hit on later. So tying the breathing and the bracing together. So with that, I think some people again think bracing, oh, that's Valsalva? Like when I gotta just hold my breath in as tight as possible. That maybe that 10 on that volume dial to call it back to the analogy that Tasha gave. So again, kind of thinking it as a dial. So if we want 10 out of 10, that might be a very heavy lift. We might hold our breath for a little bit. And we're trying to think about the ball and socket joints and our spine, very mobile joints, and preventing movement there. So we think of co-contracting the muscles around there. So for the shoulder, it's like the pecs and the lats. One of my favorite cues for that, people get this usually immediately, is like, do you have any kids or siblings? Tickle defense. You lock down that armpit. So you think about
Yep.
packing that shoulder in, right? So nobody's going to get in there and tickle my armpit. People are like, oh yeah, that makes sense, right? So finding some cues that resonate with clients, I think is huge. So that's one. For the abs, I like to kind of coach the breath first. So think like, all right, stand. Maybe like before even Tasha had you laugh, if you put your hands into your obliques, you may have felt your obliques inflate with that loud laugh. Well, if you're in a very extended position, as talked about before, with that rib cage flared, we may need to exhale first, get a nice full exhale of get the air out, let that rib cage drop, and then you want to hold the rib cage down and then fill up. And that's kind of that that laughing, that reflexive stabilizing of your trunk. And then you
Yeah.
can kind of think the same thing for the hips, it's like rooting into the floor. One of my favorite cues for that one is if anybody travels or has like been on a bus when they start from a stop and you don't have anything to hold on to, you're like, I'm not going to move. You're going to dig your feet into the floor and you're just ready for that bus or a trolley or train, whatever, to get going. So that's kind of that idea of like rooting your ground, rooting your feet into the ground so like nobody can move you.
Okay.
Oh, those are going to be, yeah,
Oh.
my favorite things.
Well, I was just going to say what Dan's favorite thing to do with bracing is when we go to places where there's an ocean and there's waves, Dan likes to brace against the waves just to see if he's stronger than them. So as they crash
I'm
out, you know, we
so
get
glad
knocked
that's not just me. I used to do that
over.
too as a kid.
They're like, I got this one. And he'll like brace, root down, squeeze everything.
Yep,
And like
I
when a
am
wave will crash
stronger
into
than the
him,
ocean.
he gets so excited about
Take
it.
that, Richard.
Yeah. Good ways to practice though.
It is a great way to practice. Anybody listening right now that's close to water, do that. You will get really good at rooting your feet in and squeezing every muscle in your body. And just copy that when you're in the gym. You're good.
Good. Fine. Just pretend a big wave is going to come knock you over. Just don't
Exactly.
drop. Yeah. Don't get caught in the
Now,
riptides either.
Yeah. Now, you touched on something that I also wanted to go a little bit deeper on, which is like the 360 concept, because I know a lot of people grew up with like Jane Fonda, or they go to the Pilates class and they're like, suck your belly in. And that's kind of the opposite of what we want to do, right?
Yeah. So that, yeah, train of thought, like thinking of that, whoop, suck in. Yeah, that might look aesthetically more pleasing, but it's, again, kind of thinking like, what's going to be more stable? Usually a wider base or a thinner base? So if we think of like, well, pyramid has a wide base, right? So we want to think of almost thinking of expanding our abdomen and then anchoring down on that. Have you ever, I think a good analogy to maybe work on this is a soda can or like a beer can or something. How if you can lightly put your weight on it, it'll actually hold somebody's weight. Like if you stood on like maybe two cans, right? If you can lightly sit on there, it's going to actually hold its structure. Now, if somebody comes and just flicks it, boom, it's going to crush down. And it's kind of that same idea with your trunk. I mean, not hopefully that brutal, but we want to think about holding that cylinder position with that rib cage and pelvis, and then 360-degree expansion with the breath. So not just the obliques, not just your abdominals, like your six-pack abs, but even into your lower back a bit there too. So that 360-degree expansion of air, it's not like pulling the belly breath per se, but letting that canister kind of open up and then pressurize there. So that's that abs kind of locking that rib cage down over the pelvis, kind of maintaining more of that neutral cylinder spine. And then that's that 360-degree position. And we could train out of that or the muscles that are involved with that. So again, not just your six-pack abs or rectus femoris, six-pack muscles, but we're looking more at like going in different directions, obliques. We have lower back strengthening, carrying a weight on one side, for example, get the QL and obliques, core muscles all around the trunk really to fire up.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome. And I know another thing that you guys have said a lot too is planes of motion. Now, I know a lot of people when they go into the gym, they know the basics of like squat, deadlift, bench press, things like that, where it is all what we would consider sagittal, like forward to back. Now, what are some of the other planes that people should be working that most are not?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we have our exercise science terms with that, but think more in direction. So front to back, we have side to side, which would be our frontal or lateral plane there. So that's going to be stuff like your lateral lunges, walking to the side, maybe even going with like the Jane Fonda type thing, a side plank with a leg lift, right? So all of that occurs with muscles that are on the side of your body. So your obliques, your abductors, all of that. Then we also have the transverse or rotary plane, which is essentially any kind of rotation that can occur. So rotation can happen in both a single joint, but it could also happen more globally throughout your entire body. So if you think about doing like chopping wood or swinging a baseball bat, like that's going to be more of a global display of rotation. So your lower body, your core has to transfer that force to your upper body, whatever implement you have in your hand that you're swinging or rotating with. So that would all occur in what's called the transverse or rotary plane of motion.
That'd be a great one for ladies out here who wants to build the side hips, the curtsy lunges that people do, or curtsy step-ups to get the lateral hips going, more of that side glute. That would be a great one. But again, a lot of people neglect all the planes of motion. And we live very sagittally, so we're missing out. And that's why injuries occur too, where people leave a lot of goals and results on the table because they're only training one plane of motion, maybe two, but not all three. And I think typically it's probably the transverse that is often the most neglected, it seems. At least that's what we kind of have noticed and come across. You know, and it's like we introduce these things, like, oh, I've never seen that. And like, you don't do these at all, this plane of motion. Like, no, I've never moved my body like that. It's like, okay, so it's a big light bulb moment for a lot of people.
Exactly. Very important. As you're saying that, all I can think of are like the tennis, the pickleball, the golf players that are like, yeah, as soon as the season hits, I feel like so tight. And it's like, well, did we work on that in the off season?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. Anybody playing recreational sports, you're going to move through those three planes of motion for sure. usually at a high level too, a high velocity, high speed. I mean, really, we all move through those three planes of motions throughout life. But again, factoring in any kind of sports that you may be playing, like when you start to add load or speed or some kind of competitive element to it, yeah, that injury risk potentially goes up if you're not exposed to that in a controlled environment such as training.
Yeah. And another thing too, that I think when I initially was introduced to PPSC and Dave Ote came out, shout out to Dave, awesome dude, is the importance of power. And especially like rotational power, because I know I'm getting the rotational power ready to go now that golf season's right around the corner. I know like this is such an important topic that not enough people know about. So when it comes to power development, how do you like to work it into the program for the average person?
Love it. Yeah. So yeah, power is extremely important, really, for people at any age. Young to old to everywhere in between, right? So anybody, that power is going to be huge for just really health and longevity. We don't always think of it as a health and longevity marker, but stimulating those fast twitch muscle fibers, that is something that we lose. One of the first things that we actually lose as we start to age. So it can become a risk when we're talking about our aging populations and fall prevention, right? So something about, do they have enough power to maybe get their foot out in front of them and then eccentric strength in their quads or legs to then catch themselves or their upper body, right? If it even goes that far. So power is definitely important. I like to train it with all my clients. Pretty much in every program that I have, there's some kind of power element to it. The way it looks may look completely different, right, than how I may train power versus how I may have a client train power. So the idea would be to move fast. I think that's the biggest element to it, that, you know, we have these exercises that you could do fast or slow, but having a fast intent is going to be a big part of speed
so
development.
You're telling me not to grab the 20 or 30 pound medicine ball for slams?
6 to 8 would be plenty, yeah. It turns out. Yeah. That's what people always do wrong too, is they go too heavy on these, this idea of power development, but it's way too heavy. So they're actually missing the point of it, but lighter is going to be better, moving faster.
Yeah. For sure.
That was a slight dig at some old clients. I love you guys. I'm just saying, these are pros telling you.
We all have them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when it comes to power, it's a lot about force, right? And force is mass times acceleration. So yeah, if we got our 20 to 30 pound med ball, how fast can you move with that versus maybe a 6 to 8? So what is going to get the most force there? Probably the lighter one moving quickly, right? We already have our mass movements with our strength training. So kind of looking at some elements of like, yeah, we might need lighter loads that we can move quickly. And that speed element, we're kind of working on the acceleration, that equation of F equals M times A, force equals mass times acceleration. We need to devote some time to the acceleration. We need to devote some time on actually moving with a quick speed or velocity, not always mass, more load. So I think that's one thing that a lot of people get wrong when they think about their training, is it's all about strength or all about load.
Well, people think that getting stronger means lifting heavier and heavier and heavier. And while, yeah, we like to lift heavy too because we're strong, we also move light loads very fast. It's that speed and that power development that'll actually take your strength levels to another level too. But I think in a lot of people's programming and training, they neglect that, especially when they're like, well, my goal is to get stronger. Hey, power is actually going to help you get stronger. But again, it's really a missed opportunity for a lot of people. And that's what we do, a lot of education on that with a lot of our coaches and the new people coming in here. And we talk about that because we'll kind of quiz them on things like that. Okay, what does strength look like to you? How do you get someone stronger? And again, oftentimes it's just progressing heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier. And they're missing that speed element of it.
Absolutely.
It'll make a world of a difference in for sure, and results.
Absolutely. And it always makes me think back to like back in middle school days when I played baseball and they're like, all the kids are grabbing the heaviest bat they can find, the biggest bat. And they're like swinging a miss. And just from personal, and they're always saying, grab the lighter bat. You can move it faster. You can make better contact. And just from personal experience, you get more dingers. Just saying. So when it comes to power development, you want dingers.
Exactly. Nice. I like that, Ryan. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, to bring it back. So if you guys were to write like a perfect program, if somebody's like, damn, I really want to incorporate all the stuff that they're talking about, like what would be like a simple layout for somebody to follow listening right now?
Well, that's a very good question. It could be a whole podcast itself.
Hey, I mean, we could just hit the restart button. I'll start recording again. Part two.
Yeah. So I would say... Yeah, start with the warm-up. That's the biggest thing. So considering what you're working that day. So for most people, I think most of our clients, most of the people we work with are usually exercising maybe 2, 3 to maybe 4 times per week in terms of like strength training. So with a lot of people, it's probably a full body type split. So we want to make sure that we're preparing those, basically those tissues or muscles, tendons, everything for what we're going to train that day. So warm-up wise, yes, making sure first you're including the warm-up. So that's one thing that we, you know, definitely see sometimes where people just jump in like, oh yeah, I'm doing bench press today. I'm going to start 135, go right to it. Yeah, no wonder your shoulder hurts. Like you didn't really prepare anything, right? So thinking about taking an intelligent approach to your warm-up, making sure the stabilizers are nice and warm. So as we spoke about earlier, that's usually the stuff on the backside of your body. So like your upper back, your maybe your core will be included. Again, that 360-degree core. And then like your glutes if you're doing some lower body. So considering adding some stuff there. And then really thinking about, okay, if we're doing maybe a full body workout, we may have some power and or skill development early in the workout. So that's where you're most neurologically fresh. We're plenty warm at this point. We followed an intelligent warm-up approach, and we're doing maybe some form of power at the start. And then we may pick 1, 2, maybe 3 strength exercises to go into our first circuit. Usually if it's full body, I'll do like an upper, a lower, and then some kind of what I like to call a filler, which that could be maybe a small little isolated movement, maybe a mobility stretch, something that an individual may need. If they don't need anything, cool. We might add just a little bit where like, hey, you can use some extra volume on this, but it fills in the gap for like the rest time that you may need before you come back to the first strength exercise.
I'm glad you said that, because I know I use fillers strictly to make sure that they actually rest.
Yes. Right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. A lot of people like to just hammer through, and it's, rest is important, especially when you're looking at strength training.
Yes.
So, and your big movements are usually trained earlier to some form of capacity, perhaps, or, you know, some challenging weight to try to make some progress, right? Or challenging in some way. So that is going to require some form of rest, whether you're training it for strength, hypertrophy, even fat loss, because you might want to have a strength stimulus early on in the workout. And then we may modify the workout based on your goals later, but having that strength to really maintain your muscle mass. Yeah, I know that might sound scary to some, but muscle mass is like gold.
Absolutely. So and I know back in the day when I was getting ready for bodybuilding shows with my coach from 3DMJ, one of the guys working under Eric Helms, Brad Loomis, we kept the heavy lifting in. He's like, dude, you to hold on to the muscle mass, we got to keep this stuff in.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, that's that mechanical tension is going to be a huge driver for hypertrophy and muscle growth, basically. Or in a case of you're in a calorie deficit, cutting for a bodybuilding show or just trying to lose some weight, we want to try to maintain that goal, that muscle mass for as long as possible. Yeah. Because at a calorie deficit, your body does not want to hold on to that goal. It goes away. So we want to try to ramp that metabolism by maintaining our muscle mass. So yeah, whatever goal you have, usually strength should be a part of it. So I would say a strength focus on that first circuit, Then maybe the second circuit, you're doing another 2 to 3 exercises. This, depending on goal, could be, again, maybe a little bit more strength focused, could be a little bit more hypertrophy focused. So maybe slightly higher rep ranges, focused on some weak points or complementary movement patterns of what you were training. So if I did a push and a squat, for example, I would maybe do a pull and a hinge or lunge in the second circuit. So I'm getting these global movement patterns or foundational movement patterns in a full body workout. And then on top of that, maybe a third circuit in that workout of either the remaining movement patterns, so like a carry, lunge, or hinge, whichever one we did not get in the second one. And then thinking about layering in based on the goal, like the weak point. So if I have a weakness of upper back, it might be extra pulling work. If I want to maybe get some, maybe I'm in a fat loss program, that could be something where, hey, I'm going to do a little bit more metabolic work here. So maybe it's a kettlebell swing for my hinge, something a little bit more explosive or to drive the heart rate with an element of speed. Maybe the lunge might be a walking lunge, something where I'm moving a little bit quicker. Then maybe I'm doing some kind of cardio machine to get my heart rate elevated, or a jump rope, something like that. So that really depends, again, on that like general goal. But like usually that's going to be the structure that I would have a workout is warm up, power, strength, accessories, and then assistance or finisher.
I would like to just chime in just to tell a quick story if I could, just because I know a lot of people get freaked out about muscle mass and getting stronger and lifting, but this is really important. And it can be, having muscle mass and being strong can be life or death, truly. And this is, I have a story for this. One of our best friends, he's 40 years old. He is a police officer here locally, and he was in an accident in August. He's a motorcycle cop, and he was in an accident and hit the side railing of an on-ramp going onto the freeway, flew over and fell 60 feet off of the on-ramp there onto the middle of the freeway. He shattered his spine. He broke his leg. I mean, it was horrific. Like, no one survives this kind of accident at all. The doctors said the only reason he survived this was because of the muscle mass and the strength that he had. Legitimately, if it was not for the amount of muscle mass he had on him, he would have been killed immediately. And this guy wasn't expected to walk again. He was in a wheelchair, all this stuff. And he just showed up in my office 2 hours ago with a cane, because he's been working on it. But because of the amount of muscle mass that he's had, his recovery is so much better. Again, he's much further along in recovery than anyone ever thought he would be. And again, they didn't even think he would get out of his fucking wheelchair. And he flew, again, fell 60 feet onto a freeway. And he survived simply because of the amount of muscle mass that he had, and because his body was strong and supported his structure. So it is really, really critical to focus on building muscle mass, that lean tissue, and strength development, especially as we age. Again, he's 40 years old, and any other person would have just been dead at that point, but he survived it because of that. So that take note there, my friends.
That is absolutely wild.
It's truly a miracle. It's incredible. Yeah. So get strong, put on some muscle mass. Don't be afraid of it.
Yep. And I'm glad that you also mentioned the recovery too, because I think that's something that doesn't get talked about enough. Like, we all have those clients that like they get sick or they have something happen to them where they have to go to the doctor, and they give them these timelines, and a lot of them crush those timelines because the average person is not active, is not taking care of their nutritional health. And when you do, things are a lot faster sometimes.
Yeah. The fitter you are, the stronger you are, the quicker you recover from things like injuries too. Like, we get hurt, but if we have the same injury as someone that was inactive, we would recover much quicker, right? There's to someone that is sedentary. So it really is very critical to focus on this consistently too. And so I hope people listening to this, if you were like hesitant to go into the gym or afraid to lift weights, heavy weights, or build muscle, don't be afraid of it. It truly can save your life, or at least will make the quality of your life in the years ahead much better and much less daunting, I promise.
Yep. And I know I had go ahead.
I was just going to say a second story there too. So with that friend, yes, he was muscled, right? So a lot of people don't necessarily want to get super bulky. I mean, that's a definitely an amazing example, but kind of an extreme example too. I mean, God forbid nobody falls off a freeway overpass, right?
Yeah.
So I just had a client go through a full knee replacement, a woman, and not extremely muscled by any means, but she's been strength training for years. And she's about just over 3 months, and she's coming in and she's already running. She just jogged today. She just showed me that she can jog. So
how old is she?
She is
50s?
Yeah, in her 50s. Yeah. And she's been active. She's a basketball coach. So she coaches youth basketball, girls basketball. So she's out there, I mean, going through these practices. I'm like, should you be doing that yet? I don't know. But so she's ahead of her timeline. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she actually just jogged, at least for the first time that I saw today.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't know, it's incredible. Like, seeing that, like, a full knee replacement just over about 3.5 months ago. So it doesn't necessarily, you don't need to be the next Ronnie Coleman. Like, just having that strength, that muscle, that bone density is really huge for really anybody, any population.
Well, in the immortal words of Ronnie Coleman, yeah, buddy. but yeah, there's so many good things there, so many things to learn. And I think too, another thing is we love as trainers talking about like reducing risk of falls, because we know how impactful that can be if somebody breaks a hip or somebody does something. And for one, the cushion, like the being able to actually take the fall, but also the coordination and strength. So like if somebody, like that's top of mind for them, like they're maybe 60, 70, and they're like, okay, that's like my number one thing I don't want to do. What would you say as far as like exercises that would be best for them?
Yeah. So when we look at some of the research, it's actually taking a look at like quad strength too. So quad strength, like being able to, I mean, really simply just squat, right? So it doesn't have to be a deep squat with a bar on your back, but like one of the problems that aging populations tend to fall into that are not active is supporting themselves, getting up and out of a chair. So when we think about like training the squat, maybe to a box to simulate some of those things and keeping that quad strength there, essentially. So I know we already mentioned about power, but like some of the power things as well. When we think about like a fall, like again, I mentioned that like eccentric strength and that quickness of getting your foot out in front. So training some things both that are like maybe some agility type based where they're being able to react to some stuff or learning some patterns. I think that's fantastic as well. So some people knock on the agility ladder, but I think it's actually pretty good. It's it has its place with the right populations. It can train some good skills. And then on top of that, the eccentric strength. So like lowering down slowly on certain things. Finding some positions where you can maybe overload some of the eccentric or lengthening position of the contraction. So just for those that are listening that don't know what eccentric is, it's the prime muscle that's working is undergoing a lengthening contraction. So in the case of a squat, it would be the lowering down. So lowering yourself to a box or at the bottom of the squat. Then really looking full circle at foundational movement patterns and training those in as best you can to their abilities. So foundational movement patterns, I mentioned the squat, but we're also looking at a hip hinge. Can you pick up something off the floor? We're also looking at the lunge. Can you do things that are on one leg? Not necessarily just a physical like forward or reverse lunge.
Balancing.
But balance. Yeah, that's another big one. So training some single leg as best you can to your abilities.
Wait, whoa. I thought the key to balance was the BOSU ball.
People use it all the time. One way to do it.
So single leg work, that's the real key.
That is.
Yes, for sure. I think that has a big part to do with it.
Yeah. Because I always think, I'm like, what? Like, I see people on the BOSU doing their thing, but I'm like, what do you think is really going to help more? Doing that or doing like maybe a kickstand deadlift with like 100 pounds? What's going to serve you better?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
How often are you on a boat? You know, like a stable surface such as like a kayak. Like, then maybe there's some application there, but yeah. Absolutely. I mean, most of us are on pretty solid ground most of the time. So being able to create some force from a stable platform, I think would do quite a bit more for somebody working on improving their balance and stability.
Yeah. And next week on the podcast, David Weck. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. But no, this is all really, really, really good stuff. And I know when you were talking about the eccentric component, it made me remember I just brought some back into the programs, like the Poliquin style step down, but not with the heel raise. Like some people don't realize how powerful that can be. Literally just practicing stepping down from a stair with your tapping your heel and coming back up. Talk about a humbling exercise.
Yeah. Oh yeah, truly. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And I also like throwing in like hops too, like even in older or aging populations. That's really important because a lot of people don't do that. And when we talk about like plyometrics, you know, people think like big box jumps and broad jumps and all this stuff too, but it doesn't have to be so expansive or aggressive. It could be just these lights. We'll do like band assisted. So it's kind of not as impactful on them, but just like little hops to get their joint tissue tolerance, joint durability. All that goes a long ways from different directions of side to side hop, up and down, you know, even little bunny hops down the turf, stuff like that. But I think that really is crucial for aging population, as well as carries and grip work, grip strength too. So I don't know if you want to chime in on the grip things. I know you're big on that.
Yeah, I mean, grip strength is huge. It's shown to be at least correlated with longevity. So I don't know if that's necessarily like you need a strong grip or more of an element of some people with a strong grip are generally pretty active, which leads maybe to a healthier lifestyle. So that could be up to interpretation. But either way, grip strength itself can be fantastic, right? So that could be developed through, again, kind of doing these strength exercises, maybe isolated with our loaded carries. But having that ability to basically generate force with your hands, I would also say your feet and, you know, really your whole body is going to be huge in terms of just building a strong and resilient person.
Yeah. And as you guys are all saying this, all I could think of is like, especially like with the hops, that's basically when we lose our footing and we catch ourselves, that's like a hop. And then with the grabbing, like if you have the grip strength to hold on to like that safety bar in the shower, like that's huge.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Again, it could be life or death, right?
It literally could be. I mean, does everybody wear their life alert in the shower? I don't know.
No.
I don't know. No, we're not. Yeah, but that we touched on so many good things. I'm so happy that this conversation took the direction that it did because I know everybody listening found this so damn helpful and we put a lot of really tactical stuff in here. So that being said, I can't let you guys go just yet. I have one more question because on this show, we always have a question from the previous guest without knowing who is going to be receiving the question. All right.
Nice. Okay.
Now, I just had somebody on, but I totally spaced and it's on me. I forgot to ask them, but we'll ask the previous one. So this one comes from Jesse Krakow. What are three things related to fitness or nutrition that they used to believe that you've changed your minds on?
Fats are bad for you. Fats are not bad for you, and fats won't make you fat. So that was one way back in the day that I used to believe. I mean, I was young when I believed that, but I always stayed away from eating fat stuff because I thought I'd get fat from it. And it turns out, no, you actually need it. It's essential. So
yeah, just need the good ones.
Eat your fats. But yeah, exactly. The good ones. I mean, don't get jackass about it. You know, avocados, you know, peanuts, peanut butter, all that good stuff. Yeah, what do you got?
Man, yeah, thinking about this. I'd almost go some of the specificity, like it's maybe more nuance. Like, okay, coming from like a powerlifting background, it was like, okay, squat, bench, deadlift. If I want to get better at those, I should really train those. But learning that like, hey, a squat in a sense is kind of a squat regardless of how it's trained. So actually improving your strength by maybe doing things not super specific all the time. So yeah, I mean, that was something initially I would do more linear periodization where it's just, oh, I'm going to pick the same exercise and just go heavier and heavier and just kind of build it up to a one rep max and I'll get stronger, right? No, kind of switching the form of the squat that I trained was a big one for me. So kind of the way that I approach training in that regard to specificity is changed in
my history. And as for periodization, what is your opinion on that with General Pop? Because I used to be like, oh my God, Tutor Bompa, he says we got to do it this way. And then you're like, well, Sally just went on a vacation and then got sick, so this went to shit.
Yeah. Periodization, that's a good one. That's a fun topic, too. So we look at most people. I mean, periodization, I think, is mostly talked about in an athletic realm, right? So preparing somebody for an event or a season. It's still, I think, applicable to Gen Pop, but probably not for the same purposes. So you can still organize your training into maybe specific phases of like, hey, we're going to work on maybe fat loss or hypertrophy or strength. And I think it's more from a mental standpoint of like, hey, let's work on maybe some different goals that may align to the bigger, greater goal, or whatever that may be, but kind of just to freshen up our training per se. And I think that also does an element of maybe injury risk reduction just from not necessarily, hey, let's train the same way all the time. Like we're strength training here, so we got to go heavy. We got to use the same exercises. So is it needed? I don't know, but I like to do elements of it with Gen Pop because I feel like, I don't know, if I'm getting kind of bored with the same program, they might be. So yep. I like to kind of have some elements of progression and rotation of certain exercises and things where we may focus on different things seasonally throughout the year.
Yeah, absolutely. It helps to keep it fresh and keep it fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, and
the third one, I have one more. More is not better. So what I mean by that is in terms of programming, like I used to think this and I used to train like this 7 days a week, all out. At a 10 out of 10, I thought that was better. I got to give it my all. I got to get to the gym and crush it every single session, 7 days a week, no off days, no rest, zero recovery. That was a big mistake because then injuries, a lot of injuries occur when you do that. And then it turns out when you recover, hey, you actually start developing more muscles. Your physique starts changing. You sleep better. You look better. Body is good and healthy. So more is not better. Optimal is better, but I mean, again, there's ways to do it. Recovery is necessary. So basically that's what I mean by that. So recovery. That is truly a big key into goals.
I'm so
getting from point A to point B.
So yeah. Glad you said that. This is something that we reiterate pretty much every week. And I'm so glad that we got you guys back in it too. And one last question, because I know that I want to be respectful of your guys' time, but I know, Tasha, you just made a really good post on this, and I wanted to bring it up. The concept of getting bulky. I know that's a big, big thing that a lot of women are very, very scared of because they're like, hey, if I start lifting these weights, I just don't want to look that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's actually interesting. I've been talking to some of my female clientele right now who are, again, they're in their 40s, and they've been struggling with their physiques, their body image, like really badly too, especially at this age where it's like premenopausal, almost going into menopause, stuff like that. And they're also have that old school mindset of, I don't want to get bulky. If I lift too heavy, I'm going to get big and bulky and look manly, and I'm going to lose my breasts. I'm going to, you know, all this stuff. And truly, like, that is not going to happen. If you want to get, it takes so much work to get bulky, like that idea of bulky. And bulky is such this weird term to me. Like, what is bulky anyways? Like, because a female has muscle on her, does that make her bulky? I'm a very athletic. I'm very strong. I'm very tiny. I'm actually quite petite. I'm 140 pounds. And even often I'm in like the 130s, but I still lift a lot of weights and I try to actively put on muscle as much as I can. And it doesn't just happen like I'm going to lift a heavy weight and then all of a sudden get bulky. So I have these conversations with these women and then I've changed their program. And I'm like, just trust me on this. And so we'll take them through this whole program of strength training and hypertrophy work. And then they fall in love with it. And they're like, my physique is the best it's ever been. I'm the most confident in myself today than I've ever been in my entire life, even more confident than I was in my 20s and my 30s. I love the way I look. I love the way I feel. My husband certainly likes the way I look. I have a lot more energy for myself and for him. Like, there's so much sex. Sex is way better too. Like, put on some muscle, change your body shape, lift heavy, get strong. Stronger in the gym, stronger in the bedroom. That's fun. It can be a real good time, ladies. So don't be afraid to lift weights, put on some lean muscle mass, because you will not just all of a sudden get super bulky. That if you are like some people are just genetically, they can put on muscle mass a little bit better than other people. Maybe I'm someone that struggles with that. You know, obviously genetics come into play, but generally speaking, there's no way that lifting heavy weights is going to make a woman bulky unless that is her goal and you actually actively work on that consistently for a long time. Again, I've been lifting weights for 20 years and I am scrawny. I have nice lean muscle on me though. I love the way my physique looks. I look fantastic and I have energy, but I'm not bulky at all. I'm still very much ladylike. I look like a woman. I can put on a dress and I look fantastic in it. So
yep.
Yeah. You won't get bulky. Lift away.
Yeah. I really think a lot of people don't realize when you really are putting on muscle, it's like watching paint dry. It takes forever.
It takes so much work. It really does.
And if at any point you do get to that point where like you see it getting to the point where you're like, I don't like this, you're going to see it a mile away. You'll be like, all right, well, caught it just in time. And then
exactly.
Nobody's got muscular by mistake.
Nope.
Just woke up one day. Oh my gosh.
But I do, I do think, cause I've had a few people that say, it must be the weights. I'm getting too bulky right after that weigh-in when it's been a bad weekend.
It's a lot of mindset on that for sure, but or what they were doing, and it's not really bulkiness. Yeah, you just ate like a jackass for 3 days and drank a whole bunch of alcohol, and now you're upset because you put on a few pounds, and it's probably a lot of water weight too. Mm-hmm. But then they think they attribute that to lifting weights and doing too much, and you need to change their program because now they look.
Yep, and when you go right back into when you go right back into the strength training and you use all that glycogen that's all stored up right now, your weight's going to go right back down.
Exactly. Yes.
So another reason to strength train.
Yeah. 100%. Love it. Yes. There
we go. Well, that was the perfect way to cap it. Like, I cannot wait to use that as a teaser for this podcast episode. So thank you guys so much. And if anybody listening right now has heard something that really resonated and they're like, oh my God, I need to do this. Or you have that friend or that mom or grandma that's like, you need to train this way because I love you and I care about you. Go send it their way and tell them Tasha, Dan, and Brian said hi. So now if anybody's listening and they're like, wow, I want to follow more of your stuff, where can they find you guys?
They can find us. We have a website, idealstrength.com. On Instagram, I am IronWolf03.
I am at idealstrength.
And email-wise, if you have any questions at all, Dan and I are more than happy to talk shop, talk shit, whatever you want. Email us. I am wolf@idealstrength.com. And he is dan@idealstrength.com.
And just so you guys know, you don't have to go searching. It's all in the show notes. Just go click away.
Nice. One more shameless plug in if I could.
Oh, please.
We do have a training app available with 25 plus programs on it. And you can find that. It's very cheap, very inexpensive. And you get coaching by both of us. It's $40 a month. So a really great deal there. And again, 25 plus programs on there. And that is?
That can be found at idealstrength.programs.app.
Nice.
There we go. Thanks. That will also be in the show notes. So thank you guys again for coming on. Really, really appreciate it. I know everybody got a lot out of it. So for everybody, till next time, I will see you all same time, same place next week. Until then, go kick some ass. I'll see you later.
Yeah. Appreciate you.